Have you ever found yourself, I mean, just totally physically chained to your laptop? You're sitting there staring at a screen, waiting for an AI agent to, churn through some massive multi-file refactoring
Oh,
task.
yeah, watching a compilation build crawl is the worst.
Right. And you want to get up, maybe go grab a coffee, switch locations, but you just can't close the lid. Because the second you shut that laptop, your local environment suspends, your SSH connection drops, and your AI agent's execution loop just completely
Into
vanishes.
the digital ether, yeah. It is basically the ultimate bottleneck in modern developer workflows right now.
Seriously.
Because we have these incredibly sophisticated reasoning engines, right? They can write hundreds of lines of code a minute. But our physical tether to that output, it hasn't evolved since, like, the desktop era.
It really hasn't.
The machine's actual hardware state is still this massive single point of failure for the AI's runtime.
Well, that is exactly the dependency chain we are breaking today. We're doing a deep dive into this brilliant builder log post. It's from July 9, 2026, and it's titled, "I Moved My Coding Agents Into My Phone and Closed the Lid."
Catchy title.
Yeah, it's part 15 of a whole series on shipping with Claude Code. And our mission for this deep dive is to figure out the exact architecture this developer used to successfully decouple their AI agents from their local machine. We're going to look at how to build this always-on mobile vibe coding setup.
And the hidden traps, right? Because they're always trapped.
Exactly, the highly technical traps you will absolutely fall into if you try to deploy this yourself. So, okay, let's unpack this because the end goal outlined in this log is just
It
wild.
really is.
The author describes being on the subway, pulling out their iPhone, dropping this massive refactoring prompt into an agent terminal, and then just putting the phone back in their pocket.
Just walking away.
Right. The agents just keep iterating, compiling, testing. If cell service drops in a tunnel, it doesn't matter. If the laptop is sitting closed on a desk at home, it doesn't matter. The work just continues.
Which requires a total mental shift. I mean, to get this working, the core thing you have to do is fundamentally demote your laptop.
Demote it. I like that.
Yeah, it can no longer be the host environment. The agents don't live there anymore. Your laptop is basically relegated to being just another dumb client terminal that you just, happen to use when you're at a desk.
Right, like a window into the actual workspace.
Exactly. The real execution environment, the persistent reality for your AI, has to be shifted entirely to an always-on headless box somewhere else.
And the author points out that to achieve this laptop-free freedom, you don't even need massive compute. Like an 8-core Linux cloud VM is fine, or even just a decent Raspberry Pi sitting on a shelf.
Because the heavy lifting is happening on the LLM provider's API side anyway.
Exactly. But you have to break the system down into three distinct specialized pieces of open source software. So let's look at layer one on that always on box, which is the session layer. And they use a tool called Herder.
Yeah, Herder, which is fascinating because it acts like, well, it's a session manager that natively understands agent execution states.
Kind of like Tatmux.
It's exactly like a Tatmux that understands agents.
Yeah.
Because normally, if you run an agent in a standard terminal, that process is just a child of your specific SSH session.
Right, so if you drop the connection, it sends that sick signal and just kills the child process.
Did.
Oh.
But Herder intercepts that whole architecture. It owns the terminal panes natively. So it functions as this immortal, always-on headless backbone. The agents run inside Herd, and you just attach and attach your views to it.
Okay, so that completely isolates the execution from the connection. They survive the disconnects.
Yep.
Then we have layer two, the messaging layer. The author uses a tool called HCOM for this. And this is basically like a group chat for peer agents,
Pretty
right?
much, yeah.
Like you spawn Claude or Codex onto this shared communication bus, and they interact like they're in a Slack channel. They can use at mentions like at Claude or at group to delegate tasks or summon specialized script.
It's a headless control plane. So the agents aren't just sitting there waiting for a human to route one agent's standard output into another's standard input. They have their own dedicated routing layer to talk to each other.
Which is wild. And then finally, layer three is the phone layer. This relies on a native iOS terminal app called Moshi.
Right, the viewport.
Yeah, Moshi connects to the box, lets you view the herd panes, drives the inputs, and it handles the push notifications for when the agents actually need human intervention. So if I'm looking at this, it's kind of like a restaurant.
Okay, a restaurant. Walk me through that.
Well, herd is the kitchen, right? It's keeping the stoves on and the food cooking, even if nobody is looking. And then HCOM is the ticketing system the chefs use to talk to each other.
Okay, I see where you're going.
And Moshi is the waiter. It just brings you the updates to your table, or your phone in this case. But let me play devil's advocate here for a second.
Go for it.
Why not just build one master app that does all three of these things? Why take this fragmented approach? Segmenting this into Herd, HCOM, and Moshi just seems like you're introducing unnecessary configuration overhead.
Well, a monolith app definitely sounds cleaner on paper, but it actually violates the core Unix philosophy, which favors modularity, each tool doing one thing perfectly.
Right.
And that modularity is the primary requirement for this entire setup because you need unshakable stability for long-running jobs.
Ah, so isolating the fault domains.
Exactly. Think about it. If you combine the mobile UI rendering thread with the session manager, a bug in parsing some weird ANSI escape sequence on your phone could crash the whole back-end service manager.
And then your agents die anyway.
Right. By decoupling the control plane from the execution plane, you isolate that risk. If the messaging bus panics, the session manager keeps the baseline processes alive. If the mobile client crashes, the agents literally don't even notice.
Okay, that makes total sense. But separating the mobile client from the execution environment introduces a pretty massive UX hurdle. And the author documents this in brutal, honest detail.
Well, the jitter problem.
Yes. Reaching into a headless machine room from a screen in your hand, you know, while you're walking down the street, it can feel incredibly janky if you're using the wrong protocol.
Yeah, the transport protocol dictates the entire viability of this. If the latency makes you not want to use it, the whole architecture is useless.
And the author specifically critiques the free tier of Moshi here, because out of the box, it only speaks SSH, which runs over TCP, and the user experience there is just agonizing.
So painful.
There's no local echo, no predictive rendering. If you're on a spotty 5G connection, you type a command, your phone sends the keystroke, the server processes it, repaints the terminal frame, and then streams those bytes back. It's a full round trip for every interaction.
And what's fascinating here is the physics of that bottleneck, because the author actually ran latency tests, and they found that the raw network path from the phone to the cloud VM was completely fine. It was direct, hovering around like tens of milliseconds.
So it wasn't the network itself.
No, the lag wasn't a bandwidth or distance issue. The lag was entirely a byproduct of TCP lacking prediction as a transport in a roaming mobile environment.
Because TCP demands like absolute sequential perfection. Right.
If your phone switches cell towers and a single packet drops, TCP just slams the brakes. It initiates this head-of-line blocking state.
Right. It refuses to process any new keystrokes until that specific missing packet is retransmitted. It's like a painfully polite conversation where you have to wait for the other person to nod after every single word you say.
That's a great way to put it. And that mechanism is great for downloading a file, sure. But for an interactive terminal, it's catastrophic. It causes that jerky one frame at a time scrolling where it freezes for 2 seconds and then violently snaps to the bottom of the page.
Which is why the author insists that upgrading to Moshi Pro is practically mandatory for this workflow, because that upgrade unlocks the Mosh protocol.
Right, Mosh. Which strips out TCP entirely and runs over UDP.
Wait, but UDP doesn't have guaranteed delivery. It just fires datagrams, right? So if a packet drops, isn't that dangerous? Like, what if you're writing code and a critical semicolon gets dropped while you're commuting?
Well, that would be true if Mosh treated the connection like a traditional byte stream. But Mosh implements the state synchronization protocol. The server and the client aren't just streaming raw text. They are constantly just trying to synchronize the latest mathematical snapshot of the terminal state.
Oh, I see. So if a packet drops,
the next packet just contains the updated state of the screen. So it self-heals instantly. There's no packet loss stalls or head-of-line blocking. And more importantly, Moshi handles local predictive rendering.
Okay, that predictive rendering is the real magic trick. You type on your phone, and Moshi predicts and draws the character locally on your screen instantly. It underlines it to show it's a prediction and then silently reconciles it with the remote server in the background.
Yep. It's like flawless communication where you're finishing each other's sentences. It masks the network latency entirely and creates this illusion of zero latency, local execution.
Even when you're jumping between Wi-Fi and cell towers, that's amazing.
It really is.
But having a smooth phone interface is great and all, but the ultimate goal here isn't just sitting on a train typing perfectly rendered commands.
Right. The goal is not having to look at the phone at all.
Exactly. And that brings us to this massive operational roadblock the author hit. What happens when your AI agent is running unattended, your phone is in your pocket, and the agent slams into an API usage limit?
Ah, the infamous 5-hour wall.
Yes. Because, you know, when we use AI in a chat window, we rarely hit rate limits. Human typing and reading speed acts as a natural throttle.
We're slow.
We are. But when you unleash an autonomous agent loop on a code base, it's firing massive context windows back and forth every few seconds. It will burn through a standard Claude account's usage quota in a matter of hours.
And if you're totally decoupled from the system, say your phone is in your pocket, you're in a meeting, you aren't there to authenticate a new API key, the agent just stops. The loop dies.
So, to bypass this, the author engineered a highly customized watchdog script. And they provisioned three separate Claude accounts, wiring them into a fallback chain. The crucial detail here is that the final account in the chain acts as a hard safety net. It's artificially capped to maintain a 30% reserve capacity.
Smart. But how does the system actually trigger the switch? How does it know an agent has died if nobody is monitoring the output?
So, when the active Claude agent hits the rate limit and crashes, there's an interruption hook that drops a tiny marker file onto the file system. It's basically a distress beacon. And meanwhile, this background watchdog process is running a loop every 2 minutes. It just scans for that marker file.
And if it finds it?
If it reads the file, it checks the remaining headroom across the fallback accounts, swaps the active API environment variables, and then forcibly injects a continue command straight into the stalled herd terminal pane.
Oh, wow. So the agent just wakes up on a fresh account and resumes.
Exactly. But here's where it gets really interesting. The author points out this massive, amusing irony in their own architecture. They assumed their sophisticated tools would cover this. But HCOM, the messaging bus designed specifically for agents, is completely blind to API usage walls. It has no internal telemetry for token limits.
Oh, man. So they have to rely on a duct-taped shell script, pulling a text file every 2 minutes to keep this highly advanced system alive.
Yes. It's just custom duct tape glue code. It totally shatters the polished illusion of vibe coding. We talk about these agents like they're plug-and-play employees, but looking at this setup, you're less of a manager and more of a mechanic constantly patching leaks in the execution loop.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this really highlights the unvarnished reality of DevOps for AI agents right now. We are at the absolute bleeding edge here. The infrastructure tooling just hasn't caught up.
Not at all.
And the author even admits in the log that they haven't actually seen this 5-hour wall hit naturally yet. They only verified that the fallback chain works by faking an interruption signal.
Wait, really? They haven't even tested it live?
Nope. They built the parachute, pulled the fake ripcord in the hangar. I just have to trust it will work when they actually jump out of the plane. It's a very raw, honest look at system building.
It is. But because this setup relies so heavily on that raw, completely hands-off automation, you know, letting a watchdog rotate accounts while agents run unattended, it requires a terrifying level of autonomy.
Oh, absolutely. You are walking into the danger zone.
The danger zone, yes. It introduces massive security and technical traps.
Yeah.
So let's detail these traps, starting with the security trap.
This one is huge. I want to seriously warn anyone listening about this. To make this architecture function, the cloud box has to be run fully unlocked.
Fully unlocked.
Yes. Unattended agents cannot be bogged down by permission prompts. They can't wait for you to tap approve on your phone every time they want to execute a bash script. So the author has Claude configured to bypass all standard permissions. And Codex is set to run with zero human approval. And this is the scary part, with the sandbox completely disabled.
No sandbox.
None. Running a non-sandboxed LMM agent with raw execution privileges on a Linux machine means that agent can read, write, execute, or delete literally anything on that file system.
So if it hallucinates and decides to wipe the root directory to fix a Git conflict, it just does it.
It just does it. The only reason this is even remotely acceptable is because the box is strictly single-purpose and network-locked. The rule here is never put actual work credentials, AWS keys, or customer database strings on this machine. It has to be a burner environment.
Right. It's a disposable clone. Okay, so that's the security trap. What about the detached versus durability trap?
Well, we established earlier that closing the Moshi app or dropping the SSH connection is fine. Herd keeps your sessions alive.
Right, in the memory.
Exactly, in the memory. Detaching from a session does not equal storage durability. If that cloud server reboots, say the hosting provider forces an update, or the system crashes, everything vanishes. Because Herd maintains those terminal states entirely in volatile RAM.
Uh-huh. So the server comes back online, but it comes back empty.
Exactly, as a blank slate.
Which brings up the infuriating third trap, the persistence trap. The author struggled with systemd on this, didn't they?
Yeah, they wanted Herd to automatically rebuild its environment if the server rebooted, so they wrapped it in a persistent background service using systemd. But if Herd is set to a named session in systemd.
Right. The author noted that when they connected from their phone after a reboot, Moshi presented a totally empty terminal. Because the phone connects to the default user session, but system spun up the agents in a completely segregated named background namespace.
The phone and the agents are essentially in two different rooms that can't see each other. It must point to the default session.
It's such a specific headache. And then the final trap is the SSH trap. The author tried to optimize things by triggering agent tasks directly from their phone using quick SSH one-shot commands, just, you know, firing a command without fully logging in.
Yeah, it would just hang, right.
Instantly, it hangs on a launch blocked error.
Yeah, because a one-shot SSH command lacks the interactive shell configuration. It doesn't allocate a pseudo terminal. So the coding agent suddenly finds itself in a void without a terminal to attach to, and it just freezes.
You have to spawn them from a fully allocated interactive session. So what does this all mean? We're looking at a system that requires bypassing core security sandboxes, relies on volatile memory, demands complex system configurations, and needs duct tape scripts just to handle API limits.
This raises an important question, really. For you listening, you have to weigh this ultimate trade-off. Is the incredible convenience of this untethered mobile AI work actually worth the inherent fragility and the severe security restrictions required to run it?
That is the big question. But for the author of this log, the payoff is verified daily. They are literally shutting their laptop at night, checking their phone in the morning, and seeing the massive refactoring task already done.
It really dismantles that age-old assumption that deep knowledge work requires sitting actively at the desk.
He does. It finally cuts that one cord tethering you to your machine.
But, you know, if we build on what the author has done here, think about this. If we are now creating these secure, isolated, always-on bubble boxes for agents to work autonomously 24/7, how long until we give these agents their own credit cards and budgets?
Wait, what?
I mean it. When does the agent go from being just a tool we monitor on our phone to an independent project manager that spins up its own network of always-on boxes?
Oh, wow. So it manages its own infrastructure.
Exactly. Okay. It monitors its own API limits and dynamically provisions ephemeral cloud instances as it needs more compute.
That is a wild thought to end on. You start by just trying to get away from your laptop to grab a coffee, and you end up giving birth to an autonomous digital IT department. But until they get their own credit cards, I guess mastering this three-layer mobile setup is the best way to finally close that lid and lose the ball and chain.